Mr. Frank proceeded in an orderly and legalistic manner, but he impressed me as someone who'd never seen the property. If you go look at this, it's not something you can readily describe, and therefore I have a picture of the property, and I wish you'd show number one if you can. I can't see from here with those lights on.
I don't think there's anything up. It's not up there, Wayne. Nothing here. Yeah.
I gave it to her. It's a CD. There are three pictures on the CD.
Family.
While she's putting that on, I might say that after we came out of the hearing on October the 11th, we developed an intense interest in this place, which we've never seen thoroughly. So we walked down the hill, looked around, took along with us a builder who knows about Portland Heights. The first thing that struck him was it's unsafe. It's built on rocks that are fractured, and I'll show you one of those. It has footings that are not embedded in the rock, but sitting on top of the rock, so that if an earthquake shakes loose this fractured rock, what will happen next? So we're very much concerned about the safety. We had had slides on a hillside 500 yards away, which is similarly rocky, so we know it can happen. The second thing that concerned about, oh, there we are. Let's go back to the previous one. I hope the council can see this. I think it's pretty clear. There. Can you see that all right?
Yes, we have it on our screen.
Good. Oh, yeah. Okay, this is the east side, the downhill side, the Mill Street terrace side of this building as you stand on Mill Street and look at it. You'll see that white footing in the middle. You can't see that it's sitting on top of that rock, but you can see that the rock is fractured for a period, for a distance of a foot or more. And the builder that I took by there said that it wouldn't take much of an earthquake to shake that apart. The next thing that struck us were these rusty I-beams. They've been there for more than 5 years. I don't know how long. But the only purpose I could think of for the I-beams is to provide security in case the rock did fracture. It's the only house on Portland Heights that I've ever seen that had an iron cage around it, sort of a specialized structure. Also, you'll see at the far end something that's been there for more than 5 years, and that's a crane. It's pretty unsightly. On the left, you'll see entrances to the two of the sewer lines, maybe a third one, I'm not sure. Okay. I'm not having much luck with this. Oh, there. Now, there's the way it's looked for more than 5 years. Perhaps her neighbor who's here can speak to this, but this is what we've had for all this time. The steps on the right go up, the crane is there, and so on. You can see where the rock has been blasted away and where a Cadillac is parked down there. Let's see, one of one. I've got one more that's worth seeing.
So you're going to have to wind it up. You've gone over your time.
Okay, can you move that? Yeah, I'm sorry. At any rate, the last thing that I was concerned about was the height of the building. There were many figures given at the hearing, but no one seemed to have taken any measurements, so I got hold of the Hoffman Construction Company. Yeah, I'll leave that up. And got a surveyor out, and he says that the height of this building above Mill Street Terrace is 71 and a half feet. Any way you look at it, it is at least 6.5 feet above any limit that's been put on building. So it's out of compliance in that way, too. Above that level, which he didn't measure, are the skylights and the iron beams. So the building is way up there in the air somewhere. Now, the last thing I'll say is, here is a picture of the two garages we've been talking about, and in between the middle of them.
You're going to have to finish up. You're way over.
Okay, it's where the sewer is. That's all I have to say. If anyone has a question, well, I'll answer it later then. Thank you.
Well, Steve, you can stay here, Wayne.
What?
You can stay here.
Stay here.
Sure. Mayor Potter and council members, my name is Janet Klapstein. My husband, Paul Silver, and I have lived at the house immediately to the north of this property for some 15 years now. We're here in support of the Goose Hollow Neighborhood League appeal and are probably one of the properties most affected by the, particularly the adjustment setbacks. I prepared written testimony, so I won't belabor those points. It does have some attachments which can explain pretty succinctly particular concerns that address our property and setbacks. In the area of predominant concern, you have services, setbacks, and how the property fits in with the neighborhood. But I think you'll find if you look at the diagram which shows the proposed setbacks adjustments that the applicant has requested, although it's nominated as almost a 4-foot setback, the slides and the attachments that Dr. Rogers has shown you show that with the what was an illegally installed stairway, it is effectively a zero lot line. And in terms of livability and problems with the neighbors, tree trimming, illicit tree trimming, things like that, it's a significant concern to us personally and to the neighborhood. And Bureau of Neighborhood Involvement did a really darn good job in trying to close out the problems and got a stipulated agreement to remove all these things. And what we see is happening is just an approval of what has already been agreed to be removed. And I don't think that's really good public policy. In terms of the street itself, Mr. Powell is accurate. This is an old street. The house itself is visible as you drive out the Sunset Highway. You look above the tunnel. It's this giant monstrosity that you can see. It's way out of scale for the rest of the neighborhood. And what there's being proposed is a larger chunk being built on top of what's already been built illegally. The street itself is very, very narrow. One of the requests is effectively a 1-foot setback for two more garages. And that the circumference of the cul-de-sac is so small you cannot do a complete turn. We've had concerns expressed by the fire department about inadequate access. It's one thing to say that that building will have sprinklers. The other older structures do not. The street is narrow enough and very, very steep. The garbage trucks have to back up the hill. You cannot pass safely. It is really quite dangerous. And the idea of adding two more garages, spaces for new cars that are smack on top of where this cul-de-sac runs is really troublesome and I think will be a public danger. There is space from the illegal carved out area that you could move that garage back without needing the setback set as requested, but I think this is just a convenient method again of covering up what has already been built there, and there's really no reason that the setback shouldn't comply with what has pre-existed. Thank you very much.
I'm next. My name is William Hawkins. I'm an architect. I have two pieces of property in the immediate neighborhood here. As an architect, I am very acutely aware of what adjustments mean and how important they can be to certain situations here. However, I've known this house for a long, long time, and it bothers me that the back construction is actually built on the public right-of-way. I don't see in all of this changes here I don't think it's proper to simply allow that to stay. The decks are actually built not within the setback, but on the public right-of-way. I have difficulty with the lot coverage. R2, I can accept at 50% of the lot, but going up to R62.7 feet bothers me, particularly when there is new construction. It seems to me the new construction should meet the change of zoning and be at 50% of the lot coverage. The maximum height has been discussed here a great deal. R2 is 40 feet. It is so hard to ascertain what actually is happening here, but when you look at it and you know that it's 71 and a half feet above the street, it seems like every little trick in the world has been done to accommodate this building. Criterion B, does this building visibly detract from the residential character of the neighborhood? I think we are all unified in the feeling that it definitely does detract. If the owner's intent is to demolish these buildings, which I could understand why they might do that, then I think they should only be allowed to build within the R2 requirements, not up to the requirements of all these adjustments that have been submitted. My neighboring property has had numerous slides. I must concur with Wayne that it's an ongoing problem in the neighborhood. I've seen the cliffs collapse in this area. It's very hard to look at this house and say there isn't a potential problem here. Thank you.
Thank you, folks.
Our next three are Julie Clifford, Joyce Clifford, and Jerry Powell.
Thank you for being here, folks. When you speak, please state your name for the record, and you each have 3 minutes.
My name is Julie Clifford, and I'm the neighbor immediately to the south of, you can see my house in one of these pictures right there.
I don't know if they can see it.
But I am just set back from her house and relatively close. My main concerns were the setbacks, but it's looking like the new plans address a lot of my issues on setbacks. Previously, the setbacks were granted by the hearings officer that were smaller than the private sewer easement that also runs along our property line where there's three sewer pipes. From what I understand, no adjustments to the setbacks are required for the R2, so we wanted to ensure that there are no further reductions in the required setbacks. As Kathleen Stokes was saying this morning, that was true. And my main concern here is to protect my property rights, but also in concert with helping my neighbor bring her property into compliance without compromising the potential of my property. And that's basically why I got involved in this process. There's a big issue on bank stabilization. When the excavation was done, several banks were created, one across the front of her property that you saw in the pictures, and then one at a 90-degree angle along my property, and the excavation also came into my property. And my concern is just the appropriate retaining wall that the former owner had promised me over the years, and I just supported his project hoping that it would be complete, and I have faith that Cindy will complete it. But what I need basically is in the staff report, my address was singled out that the party sewer was no longer going to be, it had to be broken up. They could no longer have the party sewer, and that my address needed to be broken out of that in a direct line, I assume, attached. But I don't know at this point how that's going to affect me and what I need to do for that. And it's also, I've been talking to the people, you know, environmental services and whatnot, and they all say like a 10-foot wide area is a reasonable access to sewer pipes. And then I would also, what would be really helpful for me is if the applicant could stake her property line, because we've each had a survey but I don't know the property line she's working from, and we're getting mixed signals about where the line is. But generally, I understand that this unique single-family residential cul-de-sac will eventually become higher density, and as much as that does impact the environment and livability of the home that I had purchased in this area, I can accept that. I just don't want to accept that this development might unnecessarily or unjustifiably affect the integrity of my property and its development potential in the future. So those are basically my concerns.
Thank you.
I'm Joyce Clifford, and I'm mother of Julie Clifford, the neighbor to the south of the applicant. In the picture that is on the screen, you can see off to the left the applicant's house, and that cliff you see under the main dwelling is also at the on the side, on the north side of Julie's property, and it goes down about 20 feet. It is cut into Julie's property. I would like to repeat comments made by Kevin Bergie on October 15th in response to the land use action under review. Under analysis of the land use report, this statement, Bergie quotes, houses tend to be close together with reduced building setback. The pictures that Mr. Bergie included illustrated that the distances between the structures either met or exceeded the minimums established by the setbacks. Further, varying orientations of the structure on the hilly terrain accentuates the sense of openness in the neighborhood. The one exception to this is the distance between the residents of this case and my daughter's property. Additionally, my daughter's front porch and entryway face the south boundary line, where a 1 foot, 9-inch setback is shown in the current drawings for the main single-family dwelling that was given a 4.5-foot setback in 74. We request that the setbacks for that property be maintained for the existing permitted structures, the 4.5 for the main family dwelling and whatever was permitted for the garage. The other concern is the excavation that has extended into my daughter's property, putting a 20-foot cliff in her yard, in her front yard. She does not have full use of her yard. She has a dangerous cliff of a special concern when I bring my grandchildren. It undermines the stability of her house. It has exposed the sewer lines. We have worried about this over the years. If my daughter's house develops a crack in the foundation, who will be liable for the repair and the loss of value? If a person is injured from the unprotected cliff, who is going to bear the responsibility and the expense? We ask that Julie's land be restored in her front yard, the cliff be stabilized and made safe, the sewer situation be resolved, and the full use of the front yard be returned. We are grateful that Cindy Hilliard has stepped up to the challenge she has inherited. We fully support her efforts to make her property an asset to the neighborhood.
Was that it for the support?
Yeah. That's all who signed up?
Could the principal opponent please come up? That's you, yes.
That would be me. Would you gentlemen care to have a copy, each have a copy of the survey to show? Would it clarify where the lines are that have been discussed by the last few people I've made. I'll keep one, and we can give each of the gentlemen. Okay. State my name.
Minutes, if you.
Thank you. My name is Cynthia Hilliard. I reside at 1970 Southwest Mill Street Terrace in Portland, Oregon. This is a very interesting house, I would agree. I've put a lot of time and effort into getting to this point. I believe that the staff of Portland, the Development Commission, has had people up to the site. It's a very long, involved process. I applied for the process in the end of 2004. And a lot of different departments that represent the services to determine whether or not any of this was viable had to take their time. I had to go to several meetings. So the report that was summarized by Kathleen Stokes, I think, is a very good representation of the work that has been seriously considered. It's not just a fly-by-night decision. There have been a lot of people up to the site, not the least of which was the fire department. I was there when they were determined, because the safety of the public is important. So I believe the reason that I agreed, one of the reasons I agreed to move this hearing forward to today's date was, one, I wanted all of the members to be present. I'm sorry Mr. Adams couldn't be here, but I'm certain that you gentlemen will consider what I have to say. But I also, in a spirit of cooperation, worked with my architect, made some modifications that addressed some of the concerns of the neighbors. That modification of the design included the main house as well as the lower structure. That's not something that I'm just going to put on paper and then I'm just going to disregard and go away. The house is going to be returned to its original design, which was built in 1974. The detached garage was given a variance by the City Council, I believe in 77, for a zero clearance variance. And at that time, the garage structure had a one-story level above it, which had a sloped roof that went probably to a peak of 16 feet on the east side. So the designs you have in front of you are what I intend to build. Various neighbors have spoken about the excavation in the cliff. Back when I was not the owner, the former owner did hire a company that did not come out only one time. They came out three times to determine the stability of the slope, and it was determined that it was stable. I went one step farther, and I hired some of the people that were with that firm but had started another firm and paid for quite an involved report, geotechnical engineering study of the stability of that slope. The first thing that needs to be done, the first thing that I did was to repair and replace the sewer lines with two new cleanouts. Before that can be filled in, the structure on a supporting wall for that the main house needs to be built. Once everything has to be done in order in a building project, that portion where Ms. Clifford's mother spoke about a cliff that will be replaced, and grade level will take care of that. But the geotechnical study proved that hillside, that cliff, is stable. I'm under process of getting a design for a supporting wall before the next step of construction happens.
Thank you.
Mr. Powell said he wasn't. He was confused as to whether or not I was going to demo the whole house. No, the designs that you have been given are what is the main house is going to remain. The only thing on the main house that was modified was the top level that was brought out. That's going to be pushed back to its original design. The side metal decking is going to be removed. So a lot of the concerns that Ms. Klapstein expressed, I believe, will be answered. I'm afraid I'm at a loss as to why the characterization about the whole house has been modified. It hasn't. And the lower structure was the offending structure to the city, and that has been taken down or altered, if you will, demoed down to its basic structure so that rebuilding can occur. Building takes a long time. R2 zone is in the comprehensive plan map amendment. There is a neighbor in the cul-de-sac. The address of that neighbor is 1991, and his house currently sits in an R2 zone. So all of the houses on that cul-de-sac are not R7. Mr. Powell referred to it as a multi-density. This is a low-density multifamily. The most that can be put on this is two structures. The two structures exist. I'm just trying to improve the structures. And so, let's see. It's interesting that builders have come to look at that. I've had several builders. I've paid for several professionals to give me their determination as to what needs to happen. And believe me, this alleged discrimination of the former owner, I've gone through a lot to date. I've spent a lot of money and a lot of time, and I'm working, as I said to all my neighbors, everything will be done according to code, according to the compliance requirements of the city of Portland. Let's see. Mr. Hawkins talked about bad construction built on a public right-of-way. The existing house was built in 74. Anything that needed to be approved or disapproved at that time, the house structure will remain. The height of the house is not going to change. There are some suggestions that it's higher than it's supposed to be. It was built with approval of the city of Portland. There's going to be no more elevation in the house. And so I just want to respond to what was said. I'm not sure what was meant by every trick in the book was made to accommodate this house and this request. Believe me, I've learned a lot about city codes, building compliance, how the different departments integrate. No one has come to me to talk to me. If they're all so concerned as a neighbor, one might think they would come to talk to me. I even went to my neighbor to the north door one day to introduce myself and to let her know what I was doing and basically to introduce myself, and she refused to come to the door, which is neither here nor there, except I am trying my best to bring this to a close and to have it. Now this, I will say that this neighborhood is very eclectic. There is not one house that's like another. The neighbor right across the street from me, 1969, happens to come right to the property line, almost it goes straight up. Mine will not, and I think you'll find it will be an attractive asset to the community. The other thing is that Ms. Klapstein talked about the addition of two garages. there is not going to be addition of two garages. What currently exists is the footing and the three walls of the originally built garage, which will remain. It houses two cars. What will be added will be a garage, which will be designed back behind that, but will take pressure off parking. Before this all happened, there were neighbors across the street and at the end of the cul-de-sac who, when they would have parties, and Mrs. Klapstein as well, there was no place to park. I couldn't even get to my house. So the fact that I'm going to add a garage will take pressure off the parking issue. I myself choose to park up above on Vista instead of put pressure down onto Mill Street Terrace, because you can access my house from both Vista and Mill Street Terrace. The Environmental Services Department have done an exhaustive study as to any pressure on the area. I believe that I concur with the staff report. I believe I'm done.
So I was going to ask a question, Ms. Hilliard.
Yes, Mr. Lynch.
Sometimes it's difficult here to sort out all these issues, but the flavor, yes, I'm getting is that there's a stigma attached to this property that isn't necessarily reflected onto you, but that it has kind of been a sore thumb for a long time. And I think I'm also getting the flavor that the neighbors might not be perfectly in sync with where the staff has gotten to with their proposal of suggested changes. Is that working assumption of mine at all accurate?
They're not in sync with the city staff's assumption.
Well, I'm hearing criticisms and seeing pictures of what is at the property. I think I'm hearing staff say that they're ready to go ahead and accept what you want to do based on their requirements.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm wondering if maybe we're missing each other just a little bit. Could it be that the proposal that you're intending to develop there will satisfy the criticisms we've heard from the neighborhood?
I believe it will, Mr. Leonard. Yes, this property has been infamous. Now, Ms. Klapstein said she had been at her property for 15 years. If you do the math, I'm not sure how many, when they acquired it. However, the former owner, Mr. McCullough, purchased the property in 1993. He started following the city permit process, and until between the years of 1993 and 1995, he did comply. In 1995, I believe, is when he took out permits. He didn't get them finaled, and that is where. Now, this was out of my hands. This I had nothing to do with, but believe me, I live with it daily. And until 2005, Mr. McCullough died in October of 2004. And until June of 2005, I had no ability to, because of the estate and being opened and the ramifications of the estate, I couldn't rebuild anything. But I did. I have moved forward since that time. I've spent a fair amount of money and time and effort trying to bring that. Dr. Rogers, I don't know. He seems to be a reasonable man and was happy that I replaced the sewer lines at no cost to my neighbors. The concern of sewer lines is a city concern, but I believe it will be when everything is said and done. That will be satisfied. So yes, it is. It's a very colorful property, of which I'm trying to my best to address and solve, and would definitely like to work with people, but no one has ever really come directly to me. Certainly willing to make some recommendations, which could have been made to me or could have come to me. Other than Ms. Clifford is the only one that I really know quite well. Things should be, once everything's developed and completed and built, should satisfy her. I've moved the side setbacks. I have eliminated all the windows on the south side, which is fine, taking the metal decks off the north side and willing to comply. So the plans that you have in front of you should restore the original house to its design and add a nice structure. Mr. McCullough excavated land that did exist between the detached garage and the main house. Unfortunately, I have to deal with that. I can't bring the dirt back. So that's why I'm working with this design, and I have an architect team. Have I answered you?
Yeah.
Sort of.
Yeah.
Any other questions, Mr. Stein?
I'm just curious about the steel frame. Is that to hold the house up, or is that...
No. I actually had a no, it doesn't. I actually hired a engineer from Corvallis. Mr. McCullough was originally from Corvallis. I had this gentleman, his name was Gordon Wallace, came up because I wanted to determine whether or not the house as it sat on the original foundation was fine. He said, yes, Cindy, that foundation is fine. When Mr. McCullough excavated the land and was he hired a structural engineer. And that's why the original house was designed to attach to the front building. It was a design, I believe, that Mr. Franks was seeing when he approved the zone change. But that house is not supported on those I-beams, no. It adds support structure. But once the retaining wall that is in design now is built, it'll just add to the I-beams, and the support wall should allay anyone's fears. It won't affect either property on either side of me. So no, it's not resting on those I-beams as Dr. Rogers might think, or Mr. Hawkins. I'm not sure who might have mentioned it.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Are there persons here who oppose the appeal who wish to speak on this?
We had a person sign up, Barry Barra. Is that Barra? Thank
you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Please state your name when you speak, sir.
Barry Barra. And I will be brief.
Start the timer.
I'm here in support of Cynthia Hilliard's proposed plan, as Mr. Greg Franks, the hearings officer, approved on the date in question. You've heard a lot of testimony from some well-meaning, self-serving citizens. Frankly, most of what you heard was not very accurate. I've been to all the hearings, with the hearings office process and some additional hearings past those regarding this property. Ms. Hilliard has expended a great deal of money, as you heard her testify to, purchased lots of permits as required by the city, and done everything possible to physically comply with the requests of the planning department and building services, and to bring this property into compliance with the statutes. The survey that I believe she gave you a copy of, on the 4,081 square foot lot, allows for the conformance with the comprehensive plan on this particular property into R2. And as I understand it, that's really the main issue here. The retention wall, it's my personal humble opinion, is a good addition, but the basalt that is there has been surveyed, has been engineered, and has been looked at, tested, and it's been standing since the 70s. It hasn't moved. It appears to be very sound for her proposed building project, which she has permits open for, and will take more out pending your approval. That's all I have.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Is that it for the?
Yes.
Okay. Then rebuttal by the appellant. Please come forward.
Mr. Mayor, gentlemen of the council, you know, the issue isn't whether Mrs. Hilliard is or Ms. Hilliard is trying to do the right thing. The issue isn't whether the structure as it stands is a thing of beauty or in fact whether it's structurally sound. The issue is whether the adjustments comply with Title 33. The single standard that jumps out in Title 33 with respect to adjustments is that adjustments are meant to better or equally satisfy the intent of the zone district that's applied to the parcel. The adjustments are not permitted under that same adjustment section of Title 33 to degrade the livability of the neighborhood. It is our position that the adjustments are not necessary to make that structure usable, livable, and compatible with the neighborhood. We request that the adjustments be denied or alternatively sent back to the hearings officer for his attention. Thank you.
Sure. Can I just?
You bet.
I'm going to try and hone in on something, and I'm not sure I'm right, so set me straight. Is the primary adjustment that you're against at this point the building coverage? And the reason I'm not setting aside the setbacks, but I want to get back to it next. Am I reading this right that the setbacks are already, I mean, if they're not knocking the building down, I think the setbacks are going to stay like they are. Or am I missing this? And you're really dealing with how much extra building they can add. Am I wrong on that?
Okay. In 1980, there were variances, which are slightly different from adjustments, but have a practical effect that's about the same. Granted, for zero lot line or zero setback on the north and south boundaries, the garage was built at that time, and it may actually be encroaching on the sewer easement at this time. Unfortunately, we don't really have the information in front of us to tell for sure if that's true, because I've seen three different locations for that garage. Maybe all of them are correct. Maybe none of them are correct. We don't know. That's an information problem. The lot coverage is, in fact, what I'd have to say is the key adjustment, because it permits a building footprint that's a good deal larger than any existing building permit in the area, or larger than would be permitted under a new zoning and new development. Height has basically been taken off the table by the applicant.
Okay, so I am reading this right, then, and there really is not. The dispute on the zone change really is somewhat irrelevant in the sense that it's building coverage that's going to determine what gets built there, because you can get two units under either scenario.
That's true.
And so you're saying the hearings officer erred in allowing the increase in setback from 50 or building coverage from 50% to 62 or 65?
Correct.
Okay. And on the setbacks, we really actually can't quite tell, which is an awfully odd place to be. That's why I'm kind of shaking my head. I've never seen a lot of land use cases, but not quite one where we don't know if it's or not.
Yeah, there's an information insufficiency. We could look at it that way. But it's likely that the appropriate information wasn't available in 1980 when the previous variance was approved too. But hanging your hat today on an error then is not really very good policy either.
And then how much... how much does this being a de novo hearing, how much does the coverage issue in your mind revolve around a potential problem versus, let me ask this a different way, could you be presented with an actual design that would solve the coverage issue? I guess what I'm getting at is we don't really know what the neighbors are facing. You're representing the neighborhood. And while I think the coverage issue is very critical, and actually, as you're probably picking up, and I'm just one vote, I'm sort of leaning towards your side on that argument. At the end of the day, I think it's probably more about what the design is and what actually gets built there than it is it a little bigger? So I could imagine something that was a little bigger that was nicer from the neighborhood point of view than something that was a little smaller potentially. So I'm just trying to figure out if there's any way to actually mediate in actual building design rather than try and guess at this through lot coverage. And it may just not be possible given where we are, but what do you think about that?
You know, footprint in and of itself is not really a huge thing. It's the volume that footprint enables that becomes a big issue.
Right.
The building that could occupy that site is a big deal for the neighborhood. A very big deal. The building that you have plans in front of you for, which simply, as I understand it, and I think the original applicant's intention is to leave the original house, the house as it was modified, at any rate, alone, and then build on top of the footprint of the garage and sort of extend that a bit. Building on top of the garage, I don't think we have any problem with. Building on top of an extended garage, we could have a problem with. Again, that gets to that extra 12% that is problematic, frankly. It bulks out the that mass that's at the front of the lot to approximately the size of any of the houses around it. I mean, the typical house in that area is about 1,300 to 1,500 square feet. This garage that's proposed is kind of that same amount of bulk.
Okay. That gets at it. Thank you. Yeah.
Okay. Jerry, I had a question.
Sure.
Ms. Hilliard said that the neighborhood hasn't talked with her. Have you folks made attempts to talk with her to see where there's some middle ground or at least come to some accommodation?
At the beginning, the Neighborhood Association kind of assumes that folks will come into it and talk about what they're planning when they're planning to do something that requires permits or requires a neighborhood notification. That didn't happen, and it probably would have been a good thing if that did happen. There has been increased communication between Ms. Hilliard and the neighbors. We hear about that. I'm not sure about with Dr. Rogers. I know that there's been communication recently between Ms. Hilliard and Julie, the neighbor next door. I think it's fair to say that there have been neighborhood issues here. Commissioner Leonard is exactly right. There has been friction. Part of it's been over the house. Part of it's been personalities. The neighborhood has tried to stay out of that. And we brought the appeal based on the impact of this physical structure and the possibility of a new structure occupying that same spot because of its impact on the neighborhood, not because of the personalities that were involved.
So I'm curious, though, that I was trying to find it here, that the hearings officer found that the proposed R2 was in compliance with the comprehensive plan.
Yeah, there's an issue there. Spot zones are conventionally not credited well, and the reason that they're considered an undesirable thing is because they're criteria for what you'd call a spot zone. One is that it's for a private purpose, that it has no particular public purpose. The other one is that it's a single parcel or a single ownership when it's in a situation that's shared with parcels and ownerships around it. This particular parcel is in the midst of six similarly zoned parcels and similarly planned parcels. Why this one should be different and be treated differently is kind of a puzzle.
But out of
Portland code permits it. That's all I can say.
And I guess I'm just wondering, out of fairness, I guess I'm trying to understand. I think I do understand. I mean, the question I asked originally about the stigma associated with it, I think, actually explains a lot of the energy behind this. But it does seem to me that you have a credible person who is earnestly attempting to right the wrongs of the past on that site. It does look like the hearings officer found that it was an appropriate designation, R2, to do what she wanted. And I'm just wondering, there's something in me that's telling me that the two sides aren't in sync in terms of what BDS is saying they want to have done and what the neighbors are understanding is going to be done.
In the Portland Zoning Code, under single-family residential zones, more than one dwelling unit can be placed on a parcel. They're called accessory dwelling units. Now, they're limited in size to a third of the size, I believe, of the principal dwelling unit. And that apparently was the reason that this is secondhand, is the reason that the applicant decided to ask for a zone change rather than improve her property and bring it into compliance under the single-family zone. We would have preferred that it be left in the single-family zone and improved with the accessory dwelling unit. But it's not our call. It's up to the applicant to decide what's best for them. And that would have been the discussion that would have happened had there been early communication between the neighborhood and the applicant. As it comes out at this point, it probably doesn't serve the neighborhood very well for the new construction that's going to happen on this site to be tantamount to a second full-sized house. But it's basically one dwelling unit replacing a smaller dwelling unit that was already there. I don't see an impact of that happening. Size and potential even greater size that really kind of energizes this appeal.
I guess I'm probably ready for discussion. I don't know.
Yeah, is staff going to come up and because I'm a little curious now with the closing remarks from staff that we're recommending that we approve the revised proposal as suggested by staff and how that matches up with the hearings officer's decision. So, yeah. Well,
prior to the deliberation, but Commissioner Leonard has a specific question of staff. They don't really have a closing remark section that you, but no. You can ask questions.
Thank you, Kathleen Stokes, BDS staff. I actually would like to share some facts and code citations or issues that respond to some things that I heard in the testimony, if that would be all right. These are just clarifications. This is not a summary.
That'd be helpful for me.
There was a request to remand the decision to the hearings officer When I have previously asked city attorney whether that was possible in other cases, I was informed that once there is an appeal to council, there is no avenue to do that. There was a statement that the hearings officer made his decision without...
Can I clarify that? The council can certainly remand it back.
So
that would be a question to the city attorney.
Our advice has been there is no code authority to do so. Council... how have we put it in the past? There have been times when council has desired to send something back unless somebody were to challenge that action. It's certainly not within our quasi-judicial procedures for you to remand it back. And generally, it's because we're within the 120-day rule. And so we have not provided for it in our Type 3 appeal procedures. It goes from hearings officer to you for a final decision.
Except the 120 days has been waived here, and we have remanded things back in the past.
Correct. My advice would be that it is not provided for in the code. I do not know whether if it were challenged, that would be a procedural error. I believe it could be deemed a procedural error.
Thank you. There was a statement that the hearings officer did not have full knowledge because he was not aware of the easement for sewer lines. And actually, the hearings officer did have that information. It was presented at the hearing, and it is listed in the hearings officer's exhibit list as Exhibit H14, which is titled the John Junkin Letter with Attachments, and one of the attachments is the text of the easement. there were some people who indicated that if the adjustments that have been requested were approved, even as amended, that it could allow overbuilding of the site, for lack of a better term, and that if the buildings were demolished, that then the property could be built under these adjustments. That was not part of the approval of the hearings officer. He limited the approval to the proposal as presented, and as I indicated in my presentation, the reason that there would need to be a decision by council and new findings is because the proposal was changed. It wasn't still exactly the same as what the hearings officer reviewed. However, those adjustments would still be subject to the proposal that's being reviewed, and if it were demolished, it would be a new ballgame, and it would have to meet the code standards or else come in and ask for new adjustment reviews. The height of the house, as originally built, the original structure, was approved and would remain the proposed second unit as the current proposal exists with a detached structure meets the height limit. So there was, again, question about the height overall. What's there meets the height limit for the house, and what's proposed for the second unit would meet the height limit of the code. As far as lot coverage, the reason that adjustment is still being requested is because a portion of what was approved previously was torn down, which is basically the carport area. It was approved as a covered storage area. It wasn't originally approved as a carport, but the footprint was approved. The footprint is not changing from what was originally approved under the code, so it's almost a gray area as to whether it would be would have been required, but staff determined that the building coverage adjustment was still needed because it obviously had become nonconforming with the changes in the code, and when nonconforming development is demolished, you can't rebuild it. And so in order to rebuild the carport area of the footprint, an adjustment would be needed to put back what was there before. There was a comment about the stairs on the north side of the property being illegal, and the proposal was that those stairs would never, they may be illegal now, but that there would be grading done so that no part of that stairway would be more than 2.5 feet above grade level, and that structure can be within the setback as long as it's not more than 2.5 feet above the grade level at each point.